Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. I see Roisin Ingle is writing in the Irish Times today about those very three words. How are you? They would have been throwaway words before March of 2020. Now I think when you say to somebody, how are you, you're really concerned about how they are, how they're coping with the lockdown, the pandemic. How is their mental health? How is their family? So I suppose it's back to what it would have meant when it started out. How are you? I remember giving a man a lift years ago, and he was going through a particularly bad time in his life with his wife and his kids. And he sat into the car, and I think we weren't going far. We were going from Newbridge to the Curra, which is only about 3 or 4 miles. And I said to him, how are you? He gave me everything, intimate details of the various things that were going on in his dysfunctional family. So you have to be careful, I suppose, asking those questions. How are you? But it is good news. It is good news. It's happening. It's now happening. It's now real. But we have to hold our nerve. And that's the important thing. You'll hear more and more people say that, because this time between, now and when everybody can get a vaccine, we just have to keep doing the things that we know we should do. Wash our hands, social distance, don't gather in crowds, all of those things. But it's looking hopeful that, and he heard Stephen Donnelly say it, that he's hoping that we will have some sort of normal summer in 2021. That's something to look forward to. That is something to look forward to, isn't it? Yes, it is. It is. And I know people's Christmases won't be as they would like, but it's one Christmas out of a lifetime. We'll get to the other side. We will get to the other side. If you're asking me how I am today, well, I'm a bit incapacitated. Just got a shot of pain there. I'm in Studio 6 here, and it's not built for left-handed people. And for the next while, I'm going to be left-handed, because I had a spill off the bike. They don't say you fall off the bike anymore, which sounds a little bit clumsy. It sounds like your own fault. They say you had a spill off the bike, which sounds a little bit more glamorous and adventurous, and you're some sort of, sports person. A spill off the bike. So I was cycling in yesterday, went around a bend, and just the bike went from under me. Came in here, did the show, was fine right in the way. And next thing, when I went home last night, everything starts to seize up and stiffen up. So I have my right hand in a splint. They don't know if it's broken or badly sprained. It's definitely swollen. So I'm right-handed, usually operate all the equipment here on my right-hand side. So I've reconfigured the studio a bit, and I'm working the mouse with my left hand. You don't need to know all of this. Well, you do, just in case things go horribly wrong, especially with the quiz and I'm hitting the wrong thing. So you'll know, I have an excuse, that the right hand is in a splint. Now, we spoke to Eric on Monday, and Eric told us about his daughter, Sophie, who's 11. And Sophie was told when she was around 7 that when she hit a certain age, she would need surgery for her scoliosis. And Eric was on to tell us that she is on an emergency or an urgent waiting list, and they're not getting much satisfaction from the HSE. And he also told us that yesterday himself and Sophie were on the way to government buildings to deliver a letter that Sophie had written to on Taoiseach. And he got back onto us to tell us how they got on yesterday. Just to let you know how we got on yesterday, Sophie went to government buildings yesterday, where she handed in the letter to an Taoiseach and the Leader of the Opposition, Mary Lou MacDonald. Mary Lou read out Sophie's letter in the Dáil yesterday evening, and an Taoiseach said that he would personally look into the matter and ask for further information. That's good news. Sophie felt proud of herself, along with her young brother Tyler, who really is her biggest fan. Tyler is 8. And she should feel proud of herself. She realises now how much awareness she has raised for herself and her scoliosis friends, also awaiting appointments and surgery, and hopes that change will happen soon for them all. And she's very proud of herself for being brave. Our family are so humbled at the feedback and good wishes we've received from the public, and hopefully Sophie and the other kids get their surgery soon. We'll keep you all posted as the progress we are making, and we'll be in touch soon. That's all the best. Eric and Sam, proud parents, Sophie, Chloe and Tyler. So a promise from the Taoiseach that he's going to look into the matter and ask for further information. So hopefully Sophie will get the surgery that she so desperately needs, because it is life changing. And the longer it's left, the more problematic it becomes. We spoke to Simon Delaney about a month ago, and he was setting off on a sort of a walking steps type challenge during November. And he was on Twitter last night going, steps walked 350,000, kilometres walked 180, my mental health priceless. Huge thanks to Sport Ireland and to all of you who support and joined in with me this month. Keep reaching for your personal best. And he, when he spoke to us, it's all about men of his age. He's in his mid-40s and they tend to let themselves go, don't get out and exercise. And he was that person until he started walking and now it has changed his life. So well done, Simon. Keep it up. Keep it up. You might join us, Simon, next year because we're doing a marathon a week for a year challenge for Laura Lynn. And if you're interested, Simon or anybody else, you can go onto Laura Lynn's website now and register your interest. It sounds like something that's undoable, but in fact, it's very doable. And I'm just looking, if he did 180 kilometres in a month, that's over 40 kilometres a week, which is more than a marathon a week. So if you walk on a regular basis, as in most days of the week, and you walk about an hour, you're probably doing a marathon a week walking. And I know there are lots of runners out there who do that. So if you want to join us, and we're looking to get 1,000 people to do it, and if all of those people raise €500, then we will have raised, by the end of 2021, €500,000 for Laura Lynn, which would be a brilliant achievement. Not just the walking and the running part of it, but the fundraising part of it as well. So Laura Lynn, go on, see what we're talking about, register your interest, and we'll have more details about that in the weeks to come. Patrick Frayne and Anna Carey are joining us in studio today. Patrick Frayne, you'll know from the Irish Times, he's written his first book, a memoir. And Anna is his wife and also a writer. She's on her eighth or ninth book. Seventh book. Her current one is The Boldness of Betty. And we're going to be talking to them about writing and married life and all sorts of other things. I'm really looking forward to that. And after 4 o'clock, Tim Minchin. Tim Minchin is the man who wrote the musical adaptation of Matilda, Roald Dahl's book, which has been a huge success all over the world. So not only is he a composer of musicals, he's also an actor, a director and a comedian. And he has now released his first studio album, Apart Together. And I caught up with him last week. Isn't that what they say? I caught up with him last week in his Sydney home. And it was 8:15 in the morning. I was in my house. He was in his house. And we had a good old chat. And we're going to play that out to you after 4 o'clock. And of course, our quiz of today. Let's see if I can do this now with my left hand. Yes, there you go. No, didn't work. Try it again. Hey! So today being the 2nd of December, we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years and over the centuries. Big news events, scientific breakthroughs, TVs, TV programmes, movies, songs, births and deaths. And we want two people on after 4 o'clock to answer 5 questions each. It's a great prize this week. 2-night break in Cliff House Hotel, an intimate 5-star hideaway with a Michelin star restaurant. Carved into a cliff in West Waterford, set against the backdrop of the striking Ardmore coastline. During your 2-night break at Cliff House Hotel, you can enjoy breakfast on both mornings and dinner on one evening. Find out more at cliffhome.ie. So, if you want to be involved, you have to answer our qualifying question. What are the county colours of Limerick? Easy peasy, Japanesey. What are the county colours of Limerick? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. And we might be talking to you after 4 o'clock. Let's stop that there. 51551 or ray at rte.ie. Ray, when doctors are out socially, they never ask someone how they are. They say, lovely to see you. I didn't know that. That's, I suppose, why would you? Because if you knew they were a doctor, then you go, well, I have a slight pain here and I fell off the bike and this and that. And yes, go away. Yeah. Good afternoon. 51551 ray at rte.ie. I Got You, Babe. That's UB40 and Chrissy Hind and their version of that song. 5 on 5 on RadRT.ie. Sorry about the arm, but what about the Christmas lights? My husband did a great job of ours last night and is free to help with yours, says Lucy N. Thanks for the offer, Lucy N. I've been needing help. It was funny, actually, when I fell off the bike and I was lying there cursing myself, as you do, because immediately, you know, oh, this is going to have implications, isn't it? F. And there were a few builders from the UCD building site there and they're on their lunch break and they came over and asked me, was I okay? Which is very nice of them. And then they spotted who I was and said, ah, that's your man from the telly, that's your man from the telly. We should have had cameras, we should have had cameras. And next thing I hear, this other voice from a little bit of a distance going, "Oh, well, we do, that there's CCTV there." And it was the UCD security guard who was coming over to help me as well. Brian was his name. And he gave me wipes to cut my chin and everything. So, yeah. So if I want to go back and see a recording of the fall, it's there on CCTV. I can watch it at home in slow-mo. Anne is critical. She says, "I hate when you say it's only 1 year regarding Christmas. I lost my dad. It'll be 15 years next February. My mum is 86 and is still with us, thank God. My father-in-law will be 96 December and my mother-in-law is 85. I really hope they will be all with us this time next year." Yes, I get that, Anne. I suppose when I say it's only 1 year, I'm trying to, you know, give people hope, because if you fixate on Christmas, then you might get a little bit down on yourself. That's why I'm saying it. That's and if it doesn't work, I apologise. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at RTE.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 for your texts. Now we got the most beautiful handwritten letter in from 12-year-old Keola Daly from Offaly. We're going to talk to Keola and her mum Fiona in a moment. But first, yeah, I'll read Keola's letter. It's in pencil, beautifully handwritten. "Dear Ray, my name is Keola Daly. I'm 12 years old. I'm writing to you asking for your help. But before I tell you what it is I need, I have to tell you a little bit about someone who is very important to me. And his name is Dan Daly, my granddad, also known as Grandan." See what they did there? "My Grandan was very special. He was a gardener who knew everything there was to know about trees, plants and flowers. He loved teaching us about this in a very fun way. In fact, for the last 30 years, Grandan and his son, my dad and nephew, have made Christmas wreaths for the local flower shops in town, Tullamore, which was very time consuming and cold, as they had to make them in the evenings in the shed after work. But they always said the crack was mighty and they would not change this for the world. Myself and my cousins knew Christmas was coming when they would start making the wreaths. My granddad would always say going to work wasn't a chore, it was an honour, as he loved doing his job. Saturdays were the best, as Saturday was Mucklock Day for the grandkids, and that's where Nanny and granddad lived. Nanny and granddad were so much fun. They loved playing games with us, making pancakes and playing in their beautiful garden that he created for us. My mum says that my granddad always said the grandkids are the flowers of the garden. Granddan was so funny, so kind, and he always told us how much he loved us and we loved him very much. So when lockdown happened, it was hard not seeing Nanny and Granddan. Like everyone else in the world, we were staying away to protect them. One day, my aunt, who lives with Nanny and Granddan, rang my mum and dad and said, look out for an on post postcard written by Granddan to me, Keola. As she said, it was beautifully written, telling me how proud he was of me. I was very excited to get this in the post as I waited and waited, but it never came. We rang my aunt to make sure it was posted and she assured us that she had herself posted it. But what we realised when talking to Grandan, that he may have written the address wrongly. Sadly and unexpectedly, my Grandan passed away on the 12th of September 2020. So as you can imagine, it was a very sad day. All of the family was upset. But we have so many lovely memories of Grandan, and every day there is something that reminds us of him, like butterflies. And when we drive into town, it feels like he is everywhere, as he maintained a lot of the roundabouts, hotel grounds and more. We feel very lucky to have had him in our lives. So here is where you come in, Ray. I would love to receive that postcard from my Grandan. We've tried ourselves to retrieve it, but we have failed. We would love if you could help in any way. Thank you, Keola Daly." How are you doing, Keola? How are you?
Good.
Yeah. Beautifully written letter.
Thank you.
Yeah. I feel I know your granddad now because of your letter, which is a great sign of a good writer. So well done on that. Must be very sad to not have him in your life anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he made you laugh?
Yeah, he made us laugh a lot.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of signs around that he's still around in spirit. Tell us about the butterflies.
So, every time we see a butterfly, we think it's Grandad coming down to check on us.
Yeah. Here's the strangest thing ever, Keola. Do you know you sent your letter in a gold envelope?
Yeah.
The postmark on the envelope has a butterfly on it. How about that? Isn't that very special?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Grandan is there. He's on the envelope. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. So your auntie, what's your auntie's name?
Stephanie.
Stephanie. So she was given the job of posting the postcard from your granddad to you.
Yeah.
And you suspect that he may have written the wrong address on it.
Yeah.
How much would it mean to you to get this postcard?
It would mean very much, because it wouldn't mean very much to anyone else, but it would mean a lot for me to get it.
Yeah. It'd be a lovely memory, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, I suppose, with the lockdown and everything, it was tough when he went into hospital. Your mum's on the other line. How are you doing, Fiona?
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, commiserations to you both. So yeah. Was it a stroke?
He basically, he went to bed with a headache, and unfortunately he went into a coma after that. So he's in a coma for 2 weeks up in Beaumont Hospital.
Right.
Very well looked after up there.
Yeah. And you had a little tradition, did you, of an evening you'd FaceTime or Zoom him?
Yeah, so the nurses were very good. They had a video call set up in the evening time. So we'd look at Sleeping Beauty there, and all the grandkids would be shouting at the phone to wake up Grandad.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, it wasn't meant to be, but it was lovely. It was actually a lovely time, and it was lovely that they were able to do that in those times, you know.
Yeah.
It really helped.
10 grandchildren, Tanya, Kira, Dion, Noah, Gwen, Jack, Carly, Kate, Oscar, and Keola there. And then great-grandchild as well, Jackson. So they're all got a mention.
That's
there.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So what have you done now to try and find this postcard?
Well, you know, prior to Dan's passing, we really wanted to get this postcard anyway. And we knew quite quickly after a few days when it hadn't arrived that something was up, because we had gotten a few other ones from cousins and that. So I had mentioned it to my mother, and my own mother sent in an application into the on post in Tullamore.
Yeah.
And I did then as well. I just went into my Clara post office and just inquired. They gave me the same form. So we just haven't heard anything back. Then, unfortunately, Dan passed away, and it most definitely was put on the long finger with me.
Yeah.
But you don't tell Keola Daly something, she doesn't forget. So she wanted this, and she was going to try and make it happen.
Yeah.
But as I said to your producer, you know, we know it's a needle in a haystack. We understand that. But if it is in somebody's drawer, you know, it would make Keola's day just to get it back. Mm. You know, but I think with writing the letter for Keola, it was closure as well.
Yeah.
You know, and she loves writing letters as well.
Well, she's very good at it.
She is. Yeah.
And if somebody received that and read what Dan had written about Keola, they probably would have realised that it was something special.
I think so. Yeah, I do. I think so. But, you know, then again, maybe it's just in a house that's up for rent and there's nobody there. You know,
yes,
we're just thinking of all the different.
Yes, all the different permutations
reasons,
or options. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so we're just putting the plea out there.
Yeah, so
to anybody if they do have it.
And Keola is an unusual name, isn't it, Keola? Have you met another Keola anywhere?
I think my cousin might have the same.
Yeah.
Name.
Oh, right.
My
okay.
Dad's side.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
That's where we first heard the name. Was my husband's cousin is Keola, and as soon as I heard that when I was going out with Michael about 20 years ago, I said that's the name for my daughter, most definitely.
Yeah.
Love it.
So it's music, is it?
Yeah.
Or music?
Yeah, music. Yeah.
Music. Yeah, which is beautiful.
That's right.
And Dan was very well known around the Tullamore area.
Oh, he is. Yeah, he was just a friend to everyone, and everybody knew him. He was a very humble person, and he was a gardener. So, you know, he'd done loads of people's gardens in Tullamore, and the cards, since Dan has passed, the cards are still coming in to his wife, you know, saying, you know, Dan was such a gentleman. He worked on my garden, and she wouldn't have a clue who they are, but Dan knew everyone. He knew absolutely everybody in the time.
And Liz, Dan's wife, your mother-in-law, that right? Yeah, your mother-in-law. She got some great news, oddly, bittersweet news, the day of his death.
Yeah, it actually wasn't the day of his death.
Sorry.
It was actually, he had just, he went into the coma And the next day, then her doctor contacted Stephanie, took the call, and she just basically said that that Liz was diagnosed with cancer about 20 months previous, and they just said that the tumor was gone. Liz was cancer free, so it was pretty amazing.
Yes.
So on one side of our faces we were laughing, and the other side,
you're
you
sad.
Know, we were worried about Dan,
yes.
but
yeah.
we really believed that Dan made a bit of a deal at that point with somebody, a deal with the gods, and he just said, "Please look after."
And how was his funeral?
Amazing! It was actually amazing. There was loads of fun stories. The weather, I mean, I think that Dan organised it himself, because the weather was just absolutely balmy. It was absolutely fabulous. Just meant that everybody could stand outside and be together, but not together.
Yes.
And the music, I mean, he loved music. So there was lovely music, and there was, you know, his brother got up and said lovely things about him. It was just fabulous,
yeah.
everything about it. So, like, that really helped.
Yes,
we just
yes.
saw it as a very beautiful, beautiful time.
And as well as the grandchildren saying hello to him when he was in Beaumont, you also played him music. The Beatles, I believe, was his favourite.
Yeah, yeah. The nurses were building up a bit of an idea of the type of man he was. And they were asking us, you know, what does he like? And one of the things was the Beatles. So they just played the Beatles around the clock. And, yeah. you know, that would have been, he got first class treatment there.
Yes, yeah,
you know, he
yeah.
would have loved that. So.
Ciola, you've probably never written to a radio station before. And we've done things like this before, Ciola. Sometimes we're surprised because, you know, it does sound like a needle in a haystack, but somebody might have that postcard in a drawer somewhere, and they're listening to the radio, or somebody that they know is listening to the radio, and they mention it to them, and then a couple of days down the road, we get an email to say, we might have the postcard. So we're crossing our fingers and everything else we can cross.
Fingers crossed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we really hope that we can get that postcard that Grand Dan wrote to you before he died, to you.
Yeah.
That'd be fab. And can I just say, it doesn't surprise me about that stamp, the butterfly. We get those messages every single day. That's a real Dan Daly moment now.
When I saw it, I thought that you'd put the butterfly on it, because I thought that's too much of a coincidence.
I didn't even know.
That's too much. So I'm trying to figure out why it's there. You know,
you don't have it. Look, there's some things
yes.
you just don't know.
You don't have to figure it out.
Yes.
Fair enough, Fiona. Fair enough. Yes.
Yeah.
So he was a big fan of the butterflies. There. That's.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't believe in signs, but I'm coming around when it comes to Dan Daly.
I know.
Around, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're very lucky to have known him. Absolutely, he was a legend.
Yeah.
And so, actually, can I just say as well, one of the things that he always said, and I know his family are all listening now. He loved saying, like, he loved a party. Dan absolutely loved a party. And one thing he always said was, keep her lit. So that's what we're always saying now.
Keep her lit.
Keep her lit. Means so many things.
Well, he says in the postcard, which we may or may not find, that he was very proud of you, Ciola, and your writing. And I know a little butterfly told me, as opposed to a little bird told me, that you would love a fountain pen that you can dip in ink to write your letters with. And we've arranged that for you. So we're sending one down to Tullamore to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's a Parker jotter with a bottle of black ink, and it's on its way
great.
Down to you. So there you go.
And it'll be everywhere.
And I know you've been onto Post, but we've been onto them as well, and we went through their PR people, and they're searching for the card in the four corners of the country at the moment, we're assured. So,
fantastic.
So, no stone would be left unturned. So we'll do our best. Ciola, it was a real delight talking to you.
Thank you.
And to you too, Fiona.
Yeah, and thanks very much
yeah.
to yourself and to Niamh. And I know that an awful lot of people on Post are looking for this card. And I just want to say thanks to them as well. I loved the initiative that on Post brought out at the very beginning to keep people connected with
yes.
the writing.
Yeah,
it's been
yeah.
fabulous.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Okay. That's great. Thank you so much, Fiona. Bye now, Ciola. Bye
Thank
now.
You.
Bye,
bye,
bye, bye, bye.
Bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we've husband and wife in studio, Anna Carey and Patrick Frayne. And it's great to have two people in studio, and you're allowed because you live
yeah,
together.
We're bubbled.
Yes.
Yeah, officially.
We should do more families. That's
yeah.
what we should do. We should start a trend.
What's the biggest family in Ireland and try and cram them into the studio?
That's a really good idea.
Just two separate bubbles.
Yes. I was trying to think, are there any other husband and wife writing people? You know, I know there was Gordon Snell and Maeve Binchy when she was alive.
Dave Rutten and Sarah Davis Goff,
right,
who are both great authors, just had a little baby recently. So they're the...
Or maybe the baby writes.
Who knows? I don't think he's very old, but I mean, he is just a few weeks old. But yeah, they're the only ones I can think of at the moment. But
So up until last year, we couldn't have stated that about you because, Anna, you were the writer.
You're
the journalist.
Writer,
you're the book writer, and you've brought out your first book, Patrick. So I have both books in front of me. The Boldness of Betty, and is your seventh book.
It is.
Yes, and Okay, Let's Do Your Stupid Idea is your first book.
Yeah, we were thinking of spreading the rumor that Anna had actually ghostwritten my book as well.
Yeah,
even though it's from the perspective of a 45-year-old man.
I mean, I wouldn't be the first wife to have done most of the work on her husband's work.
There's Go on,
Zelda and F. Scott Fitzgerald, but no, it isn't. It isn't true. He did write it all himself.
Because Anna's been very busy with writing over the last few years. Like, seven books is huge.
That's a huge amount. Yes. Yeah. So yours is fiction. Obviously, yours isn't fiction. It's all the truth.
But Anna's is kind of historical fiction, so she had to do loads of research, whereas mine is all truth, but it's based on my memories. So arguably, I had to do no research whatsoever.
No whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right. I read somewhere that you said that to check one fact about, you know, the 1913 lockdown. It's lockout, sorry, lockdown.
It's an easy mistake to make this year.
Sorry. Lockout, that you would have had to read 11 or 13 books, but you rang some man who had written a book about it.
Well, I did read a lot of other books as well, but there's an amazing historian called Padraig Yates who wrote kind of the definitive book on Dublin 1913. And his book was incredibly useful, but he was also enormously helpful. And I think a lot of people who write historical novels have had this experience where if you ask a historian directly a question, it could be the sort of thing that would take you months possibly to find, like some tiny little detail that somebody wrote about in a diary in 1912 once, but an expert will know and they'll be able to say, oh yes, this is what would happen as soon as they called a strike on that day. And Pork was amazing. So I really could not have written the book without him. He was incredibly helpful, and his book is brilliant.
It's historical fiction for young adults.
Yeah.
Right.
And
is that niche? Is that a...
It's less niche than you might think. Right. Like, I think there's quite a lot of writers, especially in the last few years, there's been a lot of historical fiction for younger readers, and it seems to be something that readers really appreciate. And it's also, I think, a way of... I don't want it to feel like I'm trying to bash kids over the head with, you know, a history lesson, but I think it is a way of making certain events and movements of the past come to life. And especially, like, my historical novels, two of them are about the Irish suffragette movement, and then this one's about the lockout. And I think they're not as well known as other things that happened right about the same time, because when we think of those few years, we think of World War One and 1916 War of Independence. And it's really important to me to kind of bring up those.
And
other
are your protagonists too. Always women?
Yes. I say women, like they're 14.
But yes,
so they're girls.
Aspiring but, women, yes.
Yes, exactly. it's the same with my four contemporary novels as well. But I think that they are stories and they are characters that I'd like to think would appeal to male
funny
and female readers.
Anna's a very funny writer. So, like, you kind of... All of the historical detail in the book is very lightly worn. Like, you kind of read it and you're mainly laughing at the characters. It's a touch of Adrian Mole in some of the characters.
Well, Adrian Mole would be Sue Townsend, would be the creator of Adrian Mole. Yeah, she's probably the biggest... My biggest heroine when it comes to writing, because I think she just gets the tone absolutely perfect.
I was just reading there today, this guy, a journalist, Tom Whitwell, 52 Things I Learned in 2020, and all of the 10 best-selling books of the last decade had female protagonists.
That is interesting.
Isn't it?
I wonder what, now I want to know what they are and which ones are written by women.
Well, like The Girl on the Train, obviously. All those ones.
Gone Girl.
Gone Girl, yeah.
A lot of titles with girl.
Girl, yeah.
Yes.
I do remember there was a stage where, because I review books as well, and I remember getting like realizing that about 10 of the books I'd been sent recently all had "girl" in the title, and I was like, somebody has to put a stop to this. It's just you can't tell them apart. It just became sort of a marketing
calling
thing.
Calling my book "middle-aged man girl."
Yeah, I mean, done it a few years earlier. That would have been, you know, your key to it.
So okay, let's do your stupid idea. Where did that come from then?
So that's actually, I can explain in the acknowledgements that that's actually kind of a principle I use to get through life, which is rather than, I learned it from being in a band, and me and Anna were in a band as well a long time ago, that when like someone comes along and goes, I've got this great idea, and your brain goes, that is such a stupid idea. Instead of arguing with it, I've discovered that it makes more sense to just try it. And I've discovered it's amazing for bands, for family, for life,
so it's
for work.
A bit like saying yes as opposed to no.
It's more that I've realized that you end up fighting ideas for far longer than the idea takes to fail. so it just makes more sense to say yes. And after, I'd written an essay about that topic, but I never actually used it. But it occurred to me that lots of stuff in the book kind of fit that title, which are like, the book deals with like a lot of stuff from my life, including being in bands, including when I was younger, being involved in an anarcho-syndicalist pirate radio station, or growing up in the Cara, which you'd know all about, Ray, like around all the army stuff, like all this stuff that you do when you're younger without thinking, that ultimately, if you're lucky, it's actually a good experience.
Yes.
You know.
Did you find out anything about Patrick when you read his book?
No, I think I knew pretty much all of it already. Yes. Well, I think there's some incidents, like when Patrick talks about his brother going missing in the hospital after he was born.
That's very funny.
Well, I think that's a sort of story that people might think that... that's just too good to be true. His brother goes missing, and he just happens to break his arm to get a lot of attention.
Ray's got
I mean, I don't know, Ray, you felt you needed a bit more attention. The dead wasn't enough for you this month. But I think I can confirm that these stories are true. Yeah. I mean, there are some that I remember firsthand because we've known each other so long, and we've been together for so long. There were no shock revelations. Okay. Thank God.
Yeah.
I was warned in advance.
It's both of you use comedy, humour, in your writing. But you were steered away from it, were you, by your editor sometimes?
I kind of realised when a long time ago I thought I'd like to write a kind of funny book of essays, and I'd like things like David Sedaris and things like that. But in recent years, it wasn't just my editor. It was like, in recent years, there's been such amazing personal writing from people like Emily Pine and Sinead Leeson, and that's had a big impact on me. And I realised that sometimes, and Brendan, my editor, would have pointed this out too, sometimes when you make a joke, you sell short an experience. You know, like, sometimes it's great. Sometimes, like, we all know that, you know, sometimes in dark times, jokes are brilliant. Like, in Irish funerals, people make a lot of jokes, and that makes sense, and that's part of the coping strategy. But sometimes when you're trying to make a point about something in writing, about, like, say, mental health, or kind of an essay about my mental health in the book, I had a tendency to throw in a kind of ba-dum-tsh kind of gag at the end, which really deflated any of the kind of big...
Because people
emotion
think,
put across.
I thought he was serious, but he's obviously not. But really, it's just a coping mechanism for you.
So I realised that there's amazing uses of humour. Humour can be a great way of talking about a dark thing, because it's like a good metaphor and way of understanding it. But sometimes the humour is like a safety valve when there shouldn't be a safety valve, you know. Let the pressure out here. But actually, sometimes people need to sit with the, like, and me as a person needed to learn to sit with the sad feeling, you know. So I kind of, over the course of the book, I realised as I was putting it together that it was really important how that stuff mixed up, you know.
And Anna, sorry, but like, are you, in reading about Patrick's mental health, you know, he's fragile enough. Mm. Well, let's talk about him as if he isn't here.
Yeah, stop turning away.
do you tend to be the rock then for him?
I think we're kind of mutual
rocks.
I think, which is probably a good
See, I haven't,
way
I haven't
to be.
Read a memoir of yours yet, because yeah. you haven't written one.
I don't think I will be writing one. I think our household's personal essays have topics have been taken up by Patrick. But no, I think that we are both sort of mutually supportive when needs be, which is a good thing. And again, I mean, when Patrick wrote, you know, what Patrick wrote in the book, I mean, I knew all this.
So OCD, depression, loneliness. And this is the thing I think more people are talking about. It's the school of life, isn't it? Alain de Botton.
Yeah.
About that, if more people talk about what was really going on in their heads, that the world would be an easier place to live in, because people wouldn't think they're freaks.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important.
So that was a big part of why I wrote that essay in particular, because I noticed that a number of people had said to me over the years, "Oh, you're so calm," and I was like going, and Anna would be going, "No, it's not." And people who know me know I'm not, because like, and some people have pointed out, they go, "How could you have been so honest in the book?" And the reality is, I've never been. I've never hidden any of those things from the people who I'm close to. And it just occurred to me, there's that thing. Malcolm Gladwell talks about it in his most recent book, about how no one can see anyone else's face. So everyone thinks that when they're experiencing something bad, everyone can see it.
Yes.
And the reality is, there's lots of things going on in everyone's head that, not because they're keeping it secret, you don't know about. And because... people might have an impression of me as a very calm, rational person if maybe they read me in the newspaper. I thought it would be important for some people to go, actually, he's got these more upsetting things that happen. And I think everyone kind of deals with that.
Yeah.
And in a relationship, like you were saying, like Anna is amazingly supportive of me. And I think in a relationship, I think nowadays people are much more open about those things in their relationships. But maybe outside of that, people don't look in and see that.
Mm. Yeah, because, you know, the inside of our own brain, the other thing is that it's a sort of existential philosophical question. Like, you know, you don't know how other people see the world. You don't know what their thoughts are on anything. So you can only second guess. You only have your reality really to live with. I know this.
Yeah.
it strikes me, and again, and I'm not leaving you out of this, but you probably have these chats all the time. But like, a lot of people would have these, you know, notions every year or so, existential, you know, about why are we here? What am I doing here? Am I contributing to society? But it strikes me from reading your book that you have them quite regularly, as in weekly, daily.
I think I realised shortly before writing that book that I've had kind of a certain fragile mental health for a long time, a lot of my adult life, and I hadn't really put it together before. It is when you start talking to people and you realise, oh, some people can really relate to this, but other people can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was in a band with some guys who are amazing and really close friends who I write about in the book. And I remember sometimes saying to D in my band, you know,
who is a psychologist, by the way. He's an actual, so he's got a PhD in psychology. He was a psychology student then.
But he's brilliant. And I go like, I'm constantly worried about death. And he goes, I never think about
he never thinks.
And then I go, okay, wow, that's amazing. So there's this kind of spectrum.
Yeah.
But then you go and talk to other people and they think about it even more than me.
Yeah.
And you realise there's this mad spectrum of human brains out there. And sometimes you think something based on what you see about somebody's life from the outside, about what they're like in the inside, and it's completely different.
Different, yeah, yeah.
You know.
So you know each other since you were... in university?
Yeah, we weren't in the same class. Patrick was the year ahead of me. So we met in the arts block in college. And
early 90s.
Yeah, 1995.
Friends and then partners.
Yes.
Yeah. But was that really the case, or is that just sort of a shorthand
for...
One of you fancied the other one, but it was unrequited.
We both went out like with other people.
Yes.
Over, you know, several other people in the... six years between us meeting and getting together, and like had serious proper relationships with other people, and then we were in a band together in our mid-20s.
What was the name of the band?
El Diablo.
Yeah,
like old country music.
Right.
We did a few sessions in this
building.
Right, yeah. And then we got together when we were in the band and both single.
Okay.
We've been together ever since. So it's nearly 20 years, which makes me feel quite old. 20 years next year.
And you sing a lot. Now,
yes.
And not in the sort of recording, singing in a venue type of way, but you sing around the kitchen with each other in harmony.
Well, sometimes in harmony.
We started going to these singing with workshops a few years ago.
Yeah.
And Anne has a tendency to just sing what she's doing. And in recent years, I have a tendency to just kind of harmonise. You know,
give us an example there. So you're on the radio. You're on the radio.
It could be. Well, it's often to the tune of something else, or it could be it could be singing to the cat,
right?
In just like
Beebles, is it?
Her name is Beebles. Yes, yeah. She's monstrous. She was BB when we got her in the DSPCA, and it became Beebles within a week. So I sometimes just find myself singing around the house a lot, and then we started going to these singing weekends over in England every January that are led by an amazing band called the Unthanks, and that really got us into singing in groups.
So it's a choir, not a choir.
No, it's
just kind of more like sitting around in a pub.
Right, singing.
Like a session.
So in recent years, we've started doing it a lot with friends as well.
But, yeah. but it strikes me like it's like a book club that you take a song and you go off and learn it and come back to the group.
There's a bit of that, but it's a bit more informal.
And you learn it. You go for like 2 days and say you have a couple of workshops and you just run through a song in each workshop until you can all sing it together. And when you finally get it, because it's like 30 people, you're all just sitting around, sitting on cushions and, you know, or then you go down to the pub and do some more singing. And the feeling you get when you realise you've gone from not knowing this song at all to everybody singing it together is
harmony.
Yeah, is kind of magical.
Did I read it right in the book that you believe everybody can sing?
Yeah.
No.
Do you ever sing your ideas?
No, I can't. Hold on. Here's the thing. People have said to me, everybody can sing. And a guy actually Ronan Johnson took me to his studio for a number of evenings and spent some time with me, and then he recorded me, and at the end of it all he said, "You're right, you can't sing."
So you broke him.
I broke him.
I think most people can sing. And I think
everyone can sing in a group, can enjoy the experience of singing in a group.
I think it's kind of bet out of people a bit.
I was told to lip sync.
I think those choir teachers
too. They should never do that.
Yeah, I think that's a really terrible thing to do to kids, because it really does make them think they can't sing. And it's not like everybody.
Yeah, but some people can't. But they've just been nice.
They might have perfect pitch, but they can't have the pleasure of singing. Like anybody who's sung along to something at a match. But that's the same. That's what, you know, the group singing thing is. So when we go on those weekends away,
we're going to force them to sing.
As soon as the ad break is on.
I'm going to play what you two singing, because you've recorded an EP for Christmas, or where did this come from? Christmas song. Is this
A couple of years ago for the paper, I decided to do a thing to see if I could write a Christmas hit.
Right.
And we wrote it together.
Right, we'll just play a bit of it here. This is Patrick Frayne and Anna Carey and Christmas song. That's lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's an example of a song that started with Anna singing about the cat.
Yeah, trying to get her to go away. It was not meant to be a poignant Christmas song.
It's lovely, and I've broken my own rule. I wasn't supposed to play Christmas songs until next Monday, but there you go.
I'll make an exception for you two. Thank you very much.
So the writing thing, and you know, didn't famously Maeve Binchy and Gordon Snell, they showed each other's work, and then they were allowed to criticise for 10 minutes, and that was it. Or maybe it was 15 minutes, and then it was gone. And
they used to more about it. They used to sit across from each other.
Yes,
I think so. Yeah,
think we could work in the same room.
I thought you had a shed. No, you don't have a shed.
We do. Better in summer.
It also doesn't have any Wi-Fi, which is sometimes great, but if you're working on, you know, combination of journalism and your own stuff,
it work then when you give each other your work to read?
I'm much more needy, and I give Anna
there's
stuff
a surprise.
So I give stuff to Anna a lot and go, "Is this any good?"
Yeah.
And the answer is meant to be, "Yes, is Patrick."
You're amazing. It's perfect. You don't need to change a thing.
So Anna wouldn't show me. You'd show me chunks of the book, but when loads of it's written.
Yeah, I wouldn't show it like page by page or day by day. I'd wait until there was, you know, maybe at least a quarter of it.
Yeah.
But when I'm, you know, in terms of journalism stuff, if I was like filing a piece somewhere before I file it, I should always send it to him and just like, "Is this okay?"
Yeah.
And you do the same thing.
Could do
thing.
The same, right. Just in case there's any clangers.
Yeah, that you've missed. The Boulders of Betty, Anna Carey is in bookshops now, as is OK, Let's Do Your Stupid Idea, Patrick Frayne, which is a collection of essays. You don't. It's not a memoir, is it? Is it memoir essays?
Memoir essays, right.
Yeah. It's a very popular new genre.
It kind of is.
It is, yes.
Even though Patrick's friend, Corncrake in the book, doesn't believe it. Yeah. He thinks it should really only be worth writing about a life if it's if you're a famous general or Napoleon.
Yeah. What do you feel after it, putting it out there?
It was really nice, actually, because for the kind of reasons I was talking about, like there's nothing in it, though I wrote about some personal stuff.
Yeah.
There's nothing in it that I'm sad I've out there. Okay. Like I think it's good that's out there and people have responded really nicely to it.
Okay. Anna, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Patrick, thank you.
Thanks
and good luck with your respective books. Grandma, good Marion, thanks very much. 51551 or redrt.ie. Vera got in touch over the phone. She was listening to Keola and Fiona on their search for the postcard from Grandan. And she's an old postmistress, worked in on post for 35 years, retired now. And Vera says, you should ask people working on post to shake out their post bags. A lot of cards or slim letters get stuck in post bags to get lodged. Found many over the years worth a try. Thanks for that, Vera. Thank you. And Tim Minchin wrote the best Christmas song ever, Drinking White Wine in the Sun. Always makes me cry. I think he mentions that in the interview, doesn't he? He does, yeah. And we'll play that interview out for you after we do our quiz of today. Yeah, today being the 2nd of December, we have 10 questions on events that happened on this day. Great prize to give away as well. A two-night break in Cliff House Hotel, an intimate five-star hideaway with a Michelin star restaurant carved into a cliff in West Waterford in Ardmore. Cliffhome.ie for more details. On the line we have Louise Moore. How are you doing, Louise?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. You sound very serious. And I know you're not serious at all. You're in Kilkenny.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Yeah. Teacher?
Yeah.
Primary or secondary?
Primary level.
What class?
A fourth class now.
What's that, around 9, 10? Is it 9, 10?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah, turning 10 mostly.
Yes,
yeah.
Boys or girls or both?
A mixture, right, yeah.
Right, and how are they?
Very well, yeah. They've, I think they're very happy to be back to school and they've really adjusted very well to all the changes.
Yeah, yeah. And I think children are more resilient than we give them credit for.
Well, definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we project our own anxieties onto them, which is difficult not to do, but we shouldn't do it. You have two children of your own.
Yeah, that's right.
So Leisha and Billy. And
yeah.
Whose birthday is it on Sunday?
Billy's birthday is on Sunday.
Right. What age will he be?
He's going to be six. Big six.
Right. Yeah. What's the plan?
Well, we're going to go to the cinema now that we can.
Ah, yeah.
And we'll have a cake. He has an order put in for his cake and a picture drawn of his dream cake. So I'm going to try and make a crack at that on Saturday.
It's like the Great British Bake Off.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So what's he described as his perfect cake?
He wants, it has to have jam in the middle, white sponge, butter icing, chocolate fingers on the top in the shape of a love heart, filled with Smarties and marshmallows all over the outside.
Good man, Billy. Oh, man, Billy. Yeah. So it's a pimped up Victoria sponge. That's what he's after,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, definitely, lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. And how has the whole experience over the last 9 months been for you?
It's tough going at times, I think, for everybody. But, you know, trying to take the positives out of it and just trying to, we're kind of making the most of having a bit more time at home, I suppose, more time with our family and certainly kind of looking at things from a different perspective.
Yeah. Whereabouts in Kilkenny are you?
Out in Clara.
Clara. C-L-A-R-A.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Claras around the place, isn't there? There's one in Offaly as well. I think there's one in Kildare, maybe that's Cara. You're up against Ray Dempsey in Rosslare. How are you doing, Ray?
How are you, Ray? Not to be confused with Ray Darcy as opposed to Ray Dempsey.
Ray Darcy, Ian Dempsey, oh God. Yes.
Someone say to me, oh, Ray Dempsey, oh, that's the same name as the lad off the telly, and then I say, no, that's Ray Darcy, and they go, no, I was thinking of Ian Dempsey.
Yeah, very confused. So let's get it straight then, you're not a children's TV presenter?
No, not yet.
Yeah.
And no ambition to be one, thanks.
But you once appeared on a Gerry Ryan TV show years ago.
Yeah, your research was out there. Yeah, there was a programme back in the 90s called, which Gerry, God rest him, presented, called Secrets.
Ah, yes, yeah.
And there was three different sets of contestants on it, and then got down to the final, and to win the prize, you have to throw, I don't know who came up with this one, you have to throw frisbees into a frog's mouth.
Of course it is.
You know, within, you had to get 6 in 45 seconds to win the trip to the Canaries. So, and, yeah, so that was...
Did you? You won it?
Did, yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Mid-90s, yeah. The archives there somewhere.
Yeah. So your wife's a teacher as well. Is it primary or secondary?
Primary as well, yeah. In Wexford Town. And I have two girls, Ella, who's in... first year in presentation in Wexford, and Lucy, who's 9, she's in Kilran School here, just up the road from.
And do you have an elf on the shelf?
Oh, we do, yes. He arrived, we have two elves on the shelf. They arrived last week, but they were in quarantine, so they couldn't come out of quarantine until yesterday morning. But it's great now, because Lucy, she hops out of the bed now the last two mornings, with a bit more vigour and energy to see what they've been up to. You know?
And Louise, have you got an elf on the shelf?
We do, Ray. Yes. She arrived yesterday.
Right, she. And does she have to quarantine?
No, she didn't actually. But she was straight up to mischief.
Right. Ours didn't have to quarantine either, which is, yeah. Anyway, it's great. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Five questions each. I need your answers as quickly as possible. Whoever answers most gets the prize. If we're in a draw situation, we go to a tie-break question, which you've been asked already, which is a great idea from one of our listeners. Okay, good luck to you both. Louise in Kilkenny and Ray in Rosslare. Okay, your first question. Louise, on this day in 1979, crowds attacked the US Embassy in Tripoli in Libya. On what continent is Libya?
Africa.
Is the correct answer. Ray, on this day in 1989, VP Singh was sworn in as the 8th Prime Minister of India. On what continent is India?
Asia.
That's the correct answer. Louise, second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this. Well, I just got everything in a row here. Here we go.
Mr. Fawlty, may I introduce Richard Turner?
I'm sorry?
He's a friend of mine.
Oh, you know each other, do you? Just passing through, are you?
There you go. See you tonight.
Yeah. Oh, we've opened a library, have we? Oh, nice. Please don't leave on my account, Mr. Turner.
On this day in 1940, Connie Booth, actress, was born in Indianapolis. She played the part of Polly in that sitcom alongside John Cleese. Can you name the sitcom?
Fawlty Towers.
It's the correct answer. Yes. Ray, audio one for you. Have a listen.
Detective, what are you doing?
He said they've all been programmed with the three laws. So that means we have 1,000 robots that will not try to protect themselves if it violates a direct order from a human. And I'm betting one who will.
Detective, put your gun down.
On this day in 1950, iRobot, a collection of sci-fi stories by Isaac Asimov, was published in the US. That was a clip from the 2004 film of the same name based on the book. Can you name the lead actor? You just heard there in that clip. iRobot. No.
iRobot, no. Sorry.
No.
Sci-fi.
Will Smith. Okay, early days. Louise, your third question. On this day in 1958, the Benelux Treaty was signed by Belgium, Netherlands, and which other European country?
The Benelux. Luxembourg.
Is the correct answer. Well done. And for you, Ray, on this day in 1976, Fidel Castro became president of which island nation?
Cuba.
That's the correct answer. Right, 3-2. Question number 4 for you, Louise, is an audio one. Have a listen. Don't let the sun go down on the air. Although I search myself, it's always someone else I see. So in 1991, that song was number 1 on this day. Can you name the singer who appeared with George Michael on that song?
Singer on Don't Let the Sun Go Down With Me, was it Elton John?
It was, yes, it was. Yeah. Well done. And Ray, have a listen. And will always love you. It always stops you in your tracks, that one. That was number 1 in 1992. Can you name the singer?
Whitney Houston.
Is the correct answer. Now, Louise, you're on 4. Ray, you're on 3. Louise, if you get this correct, Ray can't catch you. However, if you get it wrong and Ray gets his final question correct, we're into a tiebreak situation. Good luck with this. On this day in 1994, Andrew Lloyd Webber, composer and musical theatre producer, was admitted to hospital for ulcer treatment. The question we want answered is, in what year was Andrew Lloyd Webber born? 1948, 1958 or 1968?
19...
Need an answer from you.
1948,
say, is the correct answer. Well done, well done. Ray, it was just that one, the Will Smith.
Yeah, Will Smith let me down, not
so well. So you're not a big fan of sci-fi, neither am I.
Thanks, Ray, thank you.
Ray, we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug, as opposed to a Ray Dempsey Show mug, or an Ian Dempsey Show mug, or whatever. So enjoy that, and thanks for taking the call. See you, Ray. Yeah. Bye now, bye. Louise, you're on your way to Ardmore.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Fantastic. Wow is right. Yes, you're going there and you're going to stay a two-night break in the Cliff House Hotel. there you go. Enjoy that. Enjoy that.
Lovely. The thoughts of it. Thanks, Ray. Yeah, thank
great.
You very much.
Mind yourself. See you. Bye. Bye. Well done.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
You know Tim Minchin from performing his comedic songs all over the world. He's also an actor, a composer, a director, and he's very successfully adapted Matilda to a Broadway musical, which has been seen by nearly 10 million people all over the world. Last week, I got in touch with him by Zoom from my house to his house in Sydney. And the first question I asked him was, well, what was he that particular morning? Composer, director, actor? And he said...
This morning I was a hungover man.
Right.
Because last night was our music awards, the Arias. And I was... presenting an award, and because it's all, even though Australia's in not a bad condition COVID-wise, relatively very good actually, it's still not a crowded awards night, but so it was more like just looking at a camera, but there was plenty of wine being fed to us backstage to keep us interested. So yeah, I was a headachey man this morning.
So next year you could be receiving an award for a part together.
Well, that's the theory.
Yeah. I've just been listening to it. It's very honest. You lay yourself bare, all your foibles and insecurities. How do you feel listening back to it?
Oh, I feel all right. I mean, I guess you sort of travel through various moments of self, well, as I say in the song, If This Plane Goes Down, my life has always been a difficult balance between self-loathing and pride. You know, I've been doing it for long enough that I can see some stuff a bit objectively. I understand that my songs are structurally well-written and lyrically, you know, unique, if nothing else. And yeah, there's a sort of through line of, if not honesty, because obviously craft comes before truth, at least it's a very honest, I'm addressing issues that people, that pop music tends to dance around or pretend don't exist, like the fact that you're going to die and the fact that, you know, love is complicated and requires discipline and all those things that people don't talk about. I'm happy. I'm really stoked with the sound of the album, which is to the credit of the producer, because all the stuff I put out there has been live recordings of my live gigs, which is great. I'm a live monster, but of course you don't get the benefit of the controlled studio environment in those things. So I love that I've got to put out a record that someone's taken a lot of care over how to produce my voice and how to orchestrate it and how to record the instruments and all that stuff.
That's all very well, Tim mentioned, but I'm going back to craft over truth.
Yeah, craft over truth.
You thought you'd slip that in there and it goes unnoticed.
Yeah.
So
well, yeah.
So you talk about being tempted by other women. That great line, her vodka-soaked lips only taste of the absence of you.
Yeah.
And the you being Sarah, I suppose, your wife.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, I guess I mean by craft over truth. So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely writing about the experience of being on tour and in New York. And when you're me and you're in New York, that when you know, we used to live in England, and when you go to New York, as I'm sure you've experienced, you're up all night because of the time difference. And when you're abroad, you've got a musical on Broadway, of course, you're quite
popular.
Your ego can get a little bit inflated, out of control, yes, right? Because Americans are so happy to just... Absolutely. There's none of this Irish irony. They're just like really kind and really nice and really complimentary. Whereas if the Irish like you, they just sort of tell you you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Whereas in America, everyone's fawning over you and you're up all night and, you know, drinking. And I've definitely been in a situation where I've gone, oh God, I'm, you know, there's truth in the story of a, you know, me kissing a girl or a girl kissing me and thinking, well, what am I doing this for? But it's...
So you married Sarah, who you met at university.
Yeah. I married my first girlfriend. I married the girl I lost my virginity to. Yes. It's so great to be on Irish radio and talking about temptation and virginity. It's like, of course... On Irish radio, we're going to be talking about temptation and virginity.
But I'm fascinated because obviously Tim Minchin, who was in his late teens and early 20s, a lot has happened to you, Tim.
Yeah.
You know, you've had an amazingly worldwide hit with Matilda, you know, you which has probably made you comfortable for the rest of your life. You've no need to work, really. How many people have seen Matilda?
I don't know, but it's... It'll be a couple of million.
So things have changed. So that must put its pressures on a relationship.
Yeah. Well, that's actually the really wonderful thing about my relationship. The sort of miracle of it is that Sarah and I got together when we were very young, and she had every expectation that I would be a poor musician. because there was no, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't look like, you know, like I'm not very typical of someone who has a very good musical career, but she couldn't have been designed better to kind of handle what changed. She didn't love her. She was a social worker, which she liked the bits of it that were helpful, but didn't really love all the administration and stuff. She wanted to have kids, and she's sort of egoless. She is one of the most egoless persons I know. So when things started taking off for me, there was no, what about me and what I want? She just went, oh, this is a grand adventure, and this will be how we pay the rent, because we were struggling to pay the rent when we were wanting to have kids in our late 20s. Mm. And she just, and yet she's got this incredible balance where she's not cool around famous people and stuff. She actually is, she's quite shy and quite introverted, but equally she doesn't really care.
Right.
She's not going, oh, red carpet, I get a frock and, oh, they're going to take a photo of me and let's get some Botox. She sort of just doesn't,
yeah.
It doesn't particularly interest her.
Yeah.
I go, well, Sarah, we've got this awards night tonight. You know, I'm up for 3 awards. And she's like, but that'll be boring, right? And I'm like, yeah, I suppose it will. You know, she's not
grounded. She's grounded.
Yeah, she's grounded. And I like to think I am too, but. Mm. It definitely, one of the things we've had to deal with, she's had to deal with, is that I went from being a person no one was interested in to a person that some people were interested in, and traveling a lot around the world and being apart a lot. And you have to figure out what you're going to do with the inevitable results of that. So I, as a person who really likes women and likes a drink and has a fragile ego, so I get puffed up and feel good about myself. And, you know, I am obviously susceptible. I could be that guy. I could be the cheaty ass, you know. So I have to make a decision, right? And similarly, she could be really paranoid and jealous. And, of course, she could cheat and have an affair as well. So there's these choices to make, right? And no one writes about these things. But this is the very essence of love. Just like in my song Apart Together, I talk about the fact that love is about watching each other decay over time. These are the truths of it. So sure, we can write romantic pop songs, but I think it's my job to write the other ones, the missing ones, you know?
So the ones
about what it's really like.
Yeah, you say in you said in an interview there that's it. When you sign up, when you commit to somebody, that the beauty is that you are going to watch each other die and decay. And
fall apart, I mean, it's brutal, right?
It is brutal, yeah, it is.
But there must be a beautiful way to tell that story. There is a beautiful way. A novelist would grab onto that and write something beautiful about it. Pop songwriters tend to go or leave that to the poets, you know. And I don't know, I guess that's where I see myself existing.
And there's sort of a two fingers to LA and Hollywood, because when you read the details of Larrikins, it's shocking. It's and we all know that there's millions and millions spent, but to think that 50 million was spent on a project that's been canned.
Yeah.
It's vulgar, isn't it?
It's vulgar, yeah. I mean, I guess money is just a pretend thing. That money was spent on employing artists for 4 years, and then it was used as a write-off against a person. You know, like, it's all just shuffling. It's kind of conceptual. It's not like burning money, but the loss of time. And if you want to go and work in Hollywood, you have to accept that it's a commercial thing.
I know, but you gave up.
But yeah, they don't get much worse. Don't get much worse.
No, you sacrificed an awful lot, didn't you?
Well, come on. I mean, I was getting paid. I had a really good time. It's just, the things I could have been doing as someone who really likes making stuff, and I'm not being grand here. It's just, I really like making stuff, and I'm very, very lucky because beyond my wildest dreams, I've been able to make stuff and get paid and have a living and have a really great time. But the seed of it, the base of it, is I like making stuff. And so if I help make something for 4 years and some, you know, business transaction happens, that means that thing gets taken away. I mean, yeah, that wasn't good for my heart, you
ego
know? But you got to keep an eye on your perspective, right?
And you're back living in Australia. I would imagine delighted to be out of the country that Donald Trump was involved in.
Yeah, I didn't like that part of it. And I don't think most, you know, hell of a lot of Americans found it, you know, it's genuinely turned people into anxious messes watching that go down.
Happier things. Now, this could be wrong.
Yeah.
Because it was on your IMDb. But did your daughter celebrate her 14th birthday this week?
She did. I like it. And the amazing thing about Violet is well, it's not amazing. It's only amazing to bring the subject back to my career. But I wrote a song, a Christmas song, when she was 3 weeks old called White Wine in the Sun, which is about the experience of having a baby, your first child, you know, a long way away from home, and feeling that pull home, which it took us 11 years to respond to.
Yeah.
But it's weird. This Christmas song I wrote, which every year gets more and more people listening to it, is sort of marked by her birthday. So, and it just blows my mind that 14 years has gone by since that moment.
We'll have to play it this year. And I know you're a busy man and your time has run out. So Apart Together is the first solo album of songs written by Tim Minchin about Tim Minchin, and it's very honest. and even the lyrics alone are worth just reading off a piece of paper.
It is an album, ironically, about my time running out.
You're only 45. You're only a young lad. Okay,
I know, but look at it go.
Yeah, Tim, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Mind yourself.
Yeah, great talking to you, Ray. Take care.
Airport Piano, and that's from the Tim Minchin album. Nice man. Apart Together is the name of the album. If you haven't listened to Tim Minchin's graduation speech, it's both funny and inspiring and well worth a listen, says Paul. I'll do that. Just a quick reminder before we go about our big Christmas thank you. If you want to nominate someone to say a very big and public thank you to, send us an email into ray@rte.ie. Tell us why this person is so important in your life. It could be a partner, it could be a daughter, a son, a mother, a father, a neighbour, a workmate, or whatever, and something that they might have done this year or for a lifetime. let us know about it. Then we surprise them on the phone and give them a lovely Christmas gift. It's lovely, fuzzy, warm, Christmassy stuff. The big Christmas thank you, ray@rte.ie. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening. Try again. There you go.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.